Hi, hashtag AmWriting listeners. I'm so delighted to share with you our interview with Olivia and Megan, hosts of the Marginally podcast, in which we talk about building writer friendships and writer communities. The Author Accelerator writer community is one of my favorites. I'm on a lot of mailing lists, but I read every one I get from Author Accelerator, and I attend a lot of their webinars and classes as well. There's something about that team that helps me feel connected and part of something larger than myself. To find out more and get in on it, go to authoraccelerator.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag AmWriting. Hashtag AmWriting is the podcast about writing everything from fiction to nonfiction to short pieces to long pieces to things that you think you're going to get done this week to things that you just can't even see the end in sight of. And I am joined today by my co-host Jess Leahy and her dog.
And that's Coco.
Take it away, Jess!
My dogs. Hi, this is Jess Leahy and Coco yelling at a squirrel outside the window. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, which will be out in spring of 2021, which just went into copy edits. It's very exciting.
Yay. It is amazing. I am KJ Delantonia. I am the author of How to Be a Happier Parent, as well as the novel The Chicken Sisters, which will be out sometime this summer of 2020. I'm also a former columnist for the New York Times and a former editor there. And we have guests today, but before we even launch into that, I will own our time and recording period. It is April 3rd, 2020. We are mid-COVID, as you know if you're listening in real time, but I hope you're listening for the future, and I hope it's a happy one. And because all of our families are home, in Jess's case, her partner is recording something in another part of the house. And so she has been awarded the dogs, the custody of the dogs and their interference with recording. You know, every day it's a negotiation. I personally won today and got the silent office, but there have been many days in the past few that I have not.
I actually hit up the kids, too, who would normally take the dogs if I'm recording, but one is talking to an algebra teacher right now, and the other one is on a lecture for college. So, yeah, I won.
One, unwon.
Yeah.
And as you probably heard from that soft laughter, we have other guests today, and we're super excited to be joined by the team from the Marginally podcast. So let me just say, Olivia, Megan, welcome. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
Yep.
This is going to be great. Jess and I were recently guests on Marginally, and we'll put a link to that into the show notes. And now we're having Megan and Olivia. It's like one of those 70s sitcom trade. It's like Joni and Chachi have come to hang out with us. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where that riff was going. Let's don't take that too far.
Confusing sitcom crossovers.
Confusing sitcom, yeah. Hashtag confusing sitcom crossovers. I like it. I always loved those, actually. I don't know why.
I did
that was
too.
I think everyone did. This is perhaps why they did so many of them.
Exactly. All right.
Pause for a moment in honor of the sitcom crossovers, and then we're going to move on to, you know, in that vein, what we asked Olivia and Megan here to talk with us about is how their friendship enriches their writing lives. And more importantly, and I think more relatively, how you can create friendships and mechanisms around your friendship, if you will increase your writing life. So before we launch into that conversation, can I ask you each to just dish a little for our listeners who might not know you as well as those of us who listen to Marginally do about who you are and what you do and what you write? And I'm going to make Megan start.
Okay. I am Megan Brawley, and I am a former public librarian, but then I spent about 8 years, and I still do this part-time, writing the indexes in the back of nonfiction books. It takes a human to do that. I do that for...
Can I just interrupt and say that when I was writing Gift of Failure, I wrote a panicked email to my agent. Of course, this is my first book I've ever written. And I wrote a panicked email to my agent, like when we were sort of wrapping things up and I thought I was pretty close to done, saying, hold on, wait a second, who writes the index? And it was just this moment of sheer terror. I'm like, am I supposed to own some? Was I supposed to be doing keywords the whole time when I was writing this book? So I'm just so grateful for you people.
I knew you were going to nerd out over the indexing the minute she said it.
Well, and that's something that a lot of people don't know. I mean, authors do not have to write the indexes themselves. Publishers a lot of times say that, oh, you're responsible for it. Here's, and they may say, here's a list of some people that we've worked with before and their contact information, or they may just say, have fun, and then you're stuck going, oh my God, what am I supposed to do? But for any of our listeners who are out there who are curious or are in this position and saying, oh no, like my book goes to press in 2 weeks and I do not know how to write an index and I'm going to kill myself now. The American Society for Indexing is ASI Indexing, so asindexing.org. And you can also just type in findanindexer.com and that will bring you to like a huge directory of people who do this for a living. So well, I did that.
Before we leave that topic, I could see that we might also have listeners who would be saying to themselves, indexing books. That sounds like something I could do from the comfort of my own home, where, strangely enough, I seem to be spending a lot of time these days. I would guess maybe that website would be a good place to go if you were interested in that, too. How did you... Sorry, Olivia. Just hold your horses. How'd you get started indexing?
So I was a public librarian, and I was pregnant with my first child, and my husband and I had just moved, and we were, because of his job, we were under the impression that we might be moving again within a year. And so I thought, maybe I interviewed for a job. Nights and weekends are the busiest times for public librarians, and having a new infant, he actually hadn't been born at the time. But anyway, I was like, maybe this is not something I need to be doing right now with a husband who is not reliably home. Not his fault, but his job. So, and we'll be moving in a year. That's not fair to an employer. Maybe I'll just stay home and then reassess. And so I stayed home and my son was like a year old and I was insane because I'm not cut out for just sitting and playing with an infant all the time. Hats off to those who are. And so I dug out this indexing because I'd learned about indexing a little bit when I was in library school, and it's similar to cataloging, which is something I had done a lot of in the public library. And I had ordered this indexing course because Olivia and I we knew someone in college whose mom had done this for a living. And so I'd ordered this indexing correspondence course a couple of years earlier and then never gotten around to it because baby and moves and things. And I pulled out the CD-ROM because that is how long ago it was. And
that's still how you have to do it. If you can't use a CD-ROM, sorry, you're just not enough.
No, this was a long time ago. So I pulled out the CD-ROM and I got a babysitter for a few hours a couple days a week. And I took this correspondence course and went to a regional conference and met some people who were like, you're the same age as my daughter and she doesn't have children. And you have, at this point, he was two. You have a two-year-old. So you are now my new surrogate child with a surrogate grandchild. And they kind of, communities do, which we're going to talk about, I think, later. The indexing community is also like a very welcoming community and everybody was really helpful and interested in helping me get started. And so I got a couple of subcontracting jobs and went from there. And I freelanced as an indexer for 8 years. It's been 8 years now. And I still do it. I haven't done it so far this. I've did a couple jobs in January and that's it. Cause I'm also in school adding a school media license to my master's degree so that I can be a school librarian, because I now have two children who are in school. Well, they are at home in the basement, but they're supposed to be in school, and that schedule worked out better than the whole nights, weekends.
Were you working as a school librarian yet, or are you in the education slot and then get a job soon?
So, I don't remember.
I have been, well, I was doing my student teaching this semester.
Right.
So that is, I'm taking my last two classes and student teaching, because we also hopefully still are moving again this summer. So I chose not to apply for, you know, a job for this school year, because again, knowing that I was going to be leaving at the end of the school year just didn't make a lot of sense. So,
right.
I've been right. indexing and schooling and parenting and
hopefully writing, but we'll get to that.
So that's my really long intro.
That was my fault.
I was going to say, we're a third of the way in and we've met one guest.
Yeah. We still don't even know what you write. But before we, fine. Now we're going to switch over and hear about Olivia, and then we'll ask you what you write. We're just going to confuse everyone. And I bet all four of our voices sound exactly the same, and we're trying. I'll address you if I can. Olivia, tell us a little bit about how you got started. No, give us some background. Where are you? What are you doing now? What are you working on?
It's a great question. So it's a little bit unusual at the moment where I physically am. So right now I'm in London. I kind of split my time for personal reasons. My husband lives in London, and then I work in Ukraine, which is a fun place to work. I work in consulting. So I do fraud investigations for the most part, and like anti-bribery, anti-corruption, that sort of thing in the corporate world. So totally not writing adjacent, but not boring. So it's a fun but pretty full-on day job that I have.
But right now you're back in London.
But now I'm back in London. I decided, where would I rather get coronavirus, and sort of landed on UK, although it's not that easy to choose.
Yeah, great choices. And when it comes to writing, Megan, what is it? What are you in process with right now? And let's just then I'm going to go with how are you feeling about it. But what are you in process with right now, Megan?
So I'm on the rewrite revise for the third time stage of the second. I'm writing young adult books. So I have one that I put in a drawer, and then, of course, a year later, a week ago, had all sorts of ideas on how to fix it, but it's still in the drawer. I have written a second manuscript. I'm revising it right now, and mostly they're young adult contemporary, dealing with friendship, with the friendship between teen girls, which I think is endlessly fascinating and so formative. And of course, there's typically a romance subplot, but I wouldn't classify them as romances up front.
Mm-hmm. Olivia, what are you working on?
Okay. I'm also working on a novel. It is, I don't know, it doesn't fit into a genre neatly, but it's basically a novel about corruption. In the former Soviet Union, and wealthy business people you might call oligarchs.
Ooh, I love a good billionaire book myself. I just do. It's fun. You can hate them and yet covet their lifestyles. Or I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't exactly know what it is that works about the billionaire thing. But it really, absolutely, 100% does. So you guys have been through... you've been together as friends since college, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And together as writer friends, I know that your friendship evolved into a writer, even though you were both writers in college, you didn't out yourselves. And then eventually at some point, you became writer friends. And I would love it if one of you would just talk us through the process of turning a regular friend into somebody that's more of a, well, a writer friend, a professional friend, of shifting that relationship a little bit?
I'll let you go, Olivia.
Which one? Okay, Olivia.
Fine. So in college, we worked together on the student newspaper sort of for a couple of years. So it's not like, obviously we had read and probably edited each other's work because of that. So I think in some senses, we weren't precious about like our craft. I think that's something that's really important, that it's not like when you write something, it's not your soul that you're giving to somebody else to read, you know, it's just a work product that you've basically come up with. So that was already sort of there. But I do think that's an important element if you are going to change from just being friends into being writer friends. For us, we probably around the time we were like 30. So we're both 39. Megan will be 39 later. We sort of almost 10 years ago, we started sort of saying like, oh, I'm kind of writing. But probably only in the last 5 years did we really develop a consistent writing habit where we really started holding each other kind of accountable. We would, we each got separate writing coaches, different people, but that also helped us to kind of build in our, like accountability and things like that. And then probably the biggest thing, obviously starting this podcast has been great because now we talk really regularly about writing and that's important. And we've also just organically, because of that, once you start talking about your writing with somebody, then it's, you know, logical that you would start to send them some things that you want somebody to look at. And it, you know, I think the process of sharing your writing and like feeling more and more trust over time, like if you realize that you can trust somebody, then you start to just like expand that. I think that kind of happens naturally. But for us, it was first starting just to talk about it and then starting to hold each other accountable, and then later actually sharing work and seeing that this is a person that I can give something to and they will give me real advice or actual pointers on what could be changed, but they aren't going to be cruel or horrible to me. And so that's just sort of built up over time where we, I think, really trust each other with our writing.
Yeah,
I think,
definitely.
Go on, please.
I was just going to say one of the things that I think has helped with us is both with our friendship, because sort of a funny part of our origin story is that we were not friends at first and we really didn't like each other. And a lot of that came out of a sense of competition. And once we established that maybe we both wanted similar things, but in a different way, the competition went away. This was, at the time, we both wanted to be journalists. This was in the late 90s, before, like, just right as newspapers were really shifting from print to online. And then as that transition happened, I know that for me, that definitely, I was like, nope, I'm done. I can't. This environment is not what I want to be in. And so it wasn't like I gave up on the dream because I couldn't get out there. It was just not what I had wanted. And so it was really easy for me to shift into something else. And for that, it was shift into libraries. But anyway, not wanting the same thing. Like, we had different types of writing that we wanted to do. We had different things that we wanted in general. And so that has made a big difference. And like, you two wrote similar things for a long time, but you now write different things. And so I bet that has that changed anything for you?
Yeah, it definitely.
I think we talked about this recently. I think we talked about
might have.
Yeah, I think it does. There's, as cool as we've always been about turf stuff, like, I think we've always supported each other's work. And, you know, I think the fact that I was sort of tipping over into education stuff was helpful, but it's also just a big relief, you know, to be in different areas. And ditto, you know, Julie Lithcott-Hames, we talked about the fact that Julie and I had very similar books, but Julie, now my next project is all about substance abuse prevention, and her next project is going to be this great book called How to Be an Adult, which is a follow-up to How to Raise an Adult. And it's going to be you know, I've always been enthusiastic for Julie and I've always supported Julie, but it's going to be even easier for me to just bend over backwards to say everybody should buy this book because I'm not thinking in the back of my head, everybody should buy this book, but buy my book first. You know, there's this added ease to the relationship when you're not on identical terms.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think it's really notable that we're all... You two started out in similar veins, and Jess and I started out in similar veins, but you mentioned that you wanted something different out of it, and I think that's important, and it's probably almost always true with your writery friends that maybe you're both doing parenting essays now, or maybe you're both pursuing... you know, service work or journalism, but you maybe have different 5-year and 10-year plans. And to put that out there, it's both helpful to talk to your friend about, you know, okay, you know, where do I want to be in a few years and what are the steps I'm going to take to get there? And also helpful because you quickly see that your next steps are not necessarily the same. I mean, and if they are, then you're going to help each other along, right? That's still great. But often, you're not necessarily going in the same direction.
Yeah. I, like, in my adult life, I feel not very competitive with other people. Like, I work in a competitive industry and job in consulting world. And there are, you know, not everybody gets to make partner or whatever. But I've always felt that, like, you basically, if you destroy each other, you also destroy yourself. In the process of competing over something, like, if unless you are genuinely doing literally exactly the same thing, then if you're good at what you're doing and if you focus on your own stuff, then like there's enough for everybody. And I don't, you know, and writing, I mean, there's billions of readers and there's, you know, a lot of people to be in your audience. I don't think you need to compete.
Yeah, well, and you two have said before, you know, people aren't going to read just like one summer romance book, you know.
Yeah.
They're not going to just say, right, oh, exactly. Well, I not read usually. One summer romance book, so I don't ever have to read you know, I'm done, I've checked that off. You know, typically people will read
right
lots of ways of telling the same story. So even, you know, even if you are writing the same thing, you're not writing the same thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I agree with that.
One of the things I wanted to ask you two about is the idea of starting something. So I feel like a lot of us sit around going, man, I really wish somebody would you know, start a writing group and ask me to join, or start a podcast and ask me to be the co-host, or start a blog and ask me to contribute. And you two started yourselves. And I think that is such an important step. Was one of you more the impetus than the other? How did you make the decision to actually pull it together and do something?
So
yeah, go.
Well, it's just really funny because we live in, we're several time zones apart. We communicate a lot on, like, just with text messages, and we kind of both tend to have the same idea at the same time. And I don't know if that's because, you know, we share a whole lot in general and we, you know, trade, you know, you need to read this, this is great, or, you know, whatever. But we both were talking several years ago and talking about writing and talking about how we wanted to make more time for it and needed accountability. And I don't even know who came up with the idea first or if we both came up with it at the same time, but we were kind of both on the same page from the beginning. And this happens anytime we make a change in what we're doing. One of us will send the other a message and the other one will say, I was just thinking that exact same thing. So I don't know if we're just lucky or how that works.
We both, like, at the same time, for whatever reason, maybe we were frustrated with how hard it is sometimes to make time for writing when you do have, like, full on stuff in your life. We both started being really annoyed that a lot of writing things, like resources out there, sort of imply that you don't have a day job, or they overlook that element. And so it's not very practical for people who are really trying to do something different. And so we both started. picking that up at the
time. You know what it was? We were listening to a different writing podcast that we won't name on here, that I don't even think it's updated anymore, and it's definitely not y'all's. And we both got really frustrated with one episode where the host was talking to someone who was a, quote, like, personal brand expert. And this person was talking about how you should never, ever mention your day job. You should always be just a writer and cultivate that as your personal brand because readers don't want to know. And we had both listened to it and we both got really annoyed. And then it came out of that.
Annoyance is a very powerful tool.
It is a powerful tool. No, I forget, but I think it was probably Olivia who's talked about how she's giving up her day. And I don't think it is for you either. Giving up your day job is not your goal for either of you.
No.
I mean, heck, Megan, you're just starting embarking on a new day job. I mean, that would be kind of silly.
Yep.
So the goal was to talk to writers who want to be writers and have a day job, who don't want to brand away or hide their day job, but want to make writing part of a larger career.
Yeah. Well, and I think something that we learned through our like practice, you know, as student journalists was if you have a question, you know, you go find experts and you ask them. And if you have a platform, no matter how tiny it is, you can generally get someone to say yes, they're happy to ask. And so if you want to know how to do something, you just go ask people. So that's why we started it, was so that we could ask people like you and others with more experience. How did you do it?
And people really like to talk, at least like also this good, you know, we like to do planning and make lists and all this. There's like a good intersection with the like planner internet. And think, you know, people love to talk about their routines. It's kind of fashionable at the moment. So I think between those, like all of that, just, I mean, and it's been really fun to talk to writers about how they do that. And it's pretty inspirational, like real people get published and they also can be, you know, successful or satisfied in another job. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's good.
That's been, I think, the true delight for me. The AmWriting, the hashtag AmWriting Facebook group, for me, that's been, and not only, you know, were we so excited to create a community that, you know, a moderated community that's really just writers supporting other writers without a lot of the other crap. But there, a lot of the stuff that happens in there is, you know, I'm having trouble balancing this thing. How do other people do it? And then there's this like comment thread of, you know, 30 comments about when they find the ideal time to write and how they fit things in between X, Y. And I love that stuff. That really, for me, is what keeps me going, mainly because I say, oh, you know, my life doesn't look like that person's life, but they can get it done. So that means that I can put my butt in the chair and just, as KJ says, just open the document and I'm going to be able to get it done. And it's not even that, you know, I'm looking at these people and saying I'm so similar to these people. It just helps to know there are other people out there struggling with the same stuff. And that's the fun stuff to read for me anyway.
Yeah, I dig that too. Well, this is an excellent place to sort of slide our way into the other thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about, which is, all right, so how do you fit your work in around your day job? And how has that changed in this weird and funky time of all of our day jobs suddenly becoming at-home jobs and sort of... So I guess tell us a little bit about what's happening to you. We don't want to permanently date this episode by offering advice only if you're quarantined at home, because we certainly hope this is not something we'll be doing for very long or doing again. Although, yeah, okay, we're not going down that road. This is just not. We're just not. But right now, how are you fitting the writing into your routine, and how do you usually do that, and how's that changing? Megan.
Okay. I should say your name first. That would be nicer.
Cool. That's okay. So I am used to working from home because I freelanced for so long, and my schoolwork is actually a distance education program anyway. So that is pretty standard. So as far as dealing with the bigger change that came for me was when I started student teaching, and suddenly I was away from home for 3 days a week at school in the classroom. And what I I am the type of person who will, I've been reading Virginia Woolf's diaries lately, and I have just been laughing so hard because she has these entries where she's like, okay, so September, October, November, I'm going to work on these essays. And then when I finish that, then I'm going to read this and I'm going to do all this. And then like, and I know that her husband Leonard edited the diaries, and so not everything is in there, but that'll be the last entry. And then like 6 months will go by, and then she'll start a new one with the exact same thing. So,
and I may need to
and then with
friends.
A small entry,
it's so funny.
That's so good.
And you know, she'll be like,
well, and I love that she's doing this big term, you know, this long-term planning, and yet, you know, some of the stuff she writes about, like my favorite things that she writes are like, and then I sat and watched a spider for 6 days in a row.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. Yeah.
that sounds pretty familiar. I'm gonna get this essay done after I watched this spider for 6 days in a row.
But then at least she did write an essay about it. One of my favorite Virginia Woolf essays.
Sure, it looks like that now.
A spider. It's fantastic. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Actually, I have to say, David Sedaris also has a very popular essay about the fact that he got dove into a deep watch of it, the spiders that were hanging out in his house, too. So maybe that's my next plan. I should just start watching the spiders.
You never know.
Or just make it compliment.
Sorry, I threw you off the rails.
Today. Everyone can just go ahead and turn off the podcast because we're done. That's what you need to do. Go
watch some spiders.
Certainly worked for Annie Dillard. Yeah.
Boy, we're really naming them. All the best writers watch spiders. I'm getting concerned.
Well, for Annie Dillard, it's actually, she has an essay about praying mantises and their mating habits. That's one of my favorite things. It's in Pilgrim from Tinker Creek. So the whole insect vein, don't even get me started.
Yeah. But it is so it is funny to look at other, you know, Olivia's going to fuss at me for saying this, but quote, real writers, how they do things, and to know that I'm not the only one who sits and spends 3 pages in a journal writing about what I plan to do and then not actually do it, or not do it in that same way. So one of the things that has helped is to kind of look at things on a bigger view, not just a daily thing, but I will look at what do I want to kind of get done this week, but I also I try not to plan each day ahead of time if I can help it. Like the things that aren't obviously, you know, set in stone. Like I knew we were going to be recording this today, and I got up in a panic and checked my calendar like 4 times this morning, afraid that I had missed the time. So, you know, I do have to write those set things down. But then otherwise, it's like I don't know until the day right now what is going to be going on as far as who's going to be using my computer for a while because he has to do his schoolwork or whatever. And so to one, not get too specific, but also not get frustrated or too frustrated if I don't do the things that I had hoped to do, but I try to just do something, if that makes sense. So
total sense. Because right now, I mean, everything feels hard.
Yeah. So even if it's 11 o'clock and I'm finally, you know, in bed I have a notebook that I keep beside my bed. And as I'm falling asleep, I think of 75 things that will make my book better. I will write them all down and then go to sleep. And then so I've done something. At least every week, I try to be able to say I've moved the needle like 2 or 3 days worth of work.
Cool. But not at any specific time I used to have rules, or not rules, but the thing I was working on before everything changed in my sort of work routine life was stopping at the end of the day, you know, stopping at 5 and moving on to other things. And I have completely ditched that because
it's so
lots
hard.
Of the time now, well, lots of the time now, my day gets eaten up in different ways. I don't have control over my daylight hours in the way that I used to. My partner's going to go to the grocery store for us today, and it'll take me an hour probably plus to deal with what he brings back into the house correctly. So if at night I suddenly find myself able, as I did last night, to like plow into some, it was a task. It was putting a bunch of videos on my website. And all of a sudden I'm like, I can do this. There's no way I'm going to shut that down, because so often I just sit around going, I can't do this.
Yeah. Well, and we've talked about that before. Olivia and I have about kind of working more intuitively with your time. And so if you have the energy to do something, you do it. If you think of all of the key to changing the manuscript in the drawer and making it not terrible, then you write all of those notes down and maybe not start working on it because you have to finish something else. But it is helpful to just, when you feel like, I'm not saying you need to wait for the muse, but when you do have lots of demands on your time, if something does strike, you have to get to it. At least take notes so that you can find your way back to it when you do have the time. But if you have the energy at 9 o'clock at night, and right now things are weird. And so for me, if I sleep until 8:30 the next day because I stayed up until midnight writing, that's okay. So you just kind of do things where you can. I got up this morning and my kids were already on their schoolwork, and I was like, oh, I'm an awesome mom.
Wow.
How about you, Olivia? What's your routine or lack thereof looking like right now?
My routine looks probably more consistent to before, but I don't have any dependent small people. So like basically I just am at my house more. And because of the time difference, I need to start working 2 hours before I normally would. So that is, basically every day I wake up and I journal a little bit after breakfast, and then I work on my book like half an hour or an hour, however much I can fit in. And that's pretty much like 3 out of 5 work days every week. Usually the beginning of the week is easier than the end of the week. And then I also usually put in a really long, however long I can carve out, maybe the whole day, weekend writing day, which is good because it just allows me to not rush into my writing. Like I can whatever mess around on the internet for a while. I know that's not like, this is not my like 5-star writing advice, but it's definitely sometimes you need to do it.
First, mess around on the internet. It works great.
Then watch the spiders.
But you know that feeling where you like haven't gotten to do anything fun? I have this like, I'm always whining to my husband or whatever is like left over from when I was a teenager, but it's like I didn't get to like just mess around, you know? And so one day a week, it's really important to just like, I don't know, read those newsletters that you're subscribed to and like click the links and clear out some of the random things in your tabs. And then once you've feel like you've done something fun on the internet, then turn it off. And then I work a lot more and I can usually, you know, get like 1,000-1,500 words written, which is a lot for me usually. And then like another day on the weekend, I try to take off and not do anything if I can, just because it's good to not be so much online. But the other thing, to Megan's point about like thinking maybe in a bigger, so like work-life balance or something like that, I don't think that you can like do everything every day. So I also use a lot of my vacation to take writing breaks, like during a normal work week, especially like Friday, sometimes it's slow in the office or something. So it's pretty easy to either like take a half day or take a whole day and just sit with your book and spend a bit more time. Cause like I get better writing done for sure if I'm sitting like for longer periods in front of the computer. It's kind of logical. If you're trying to write for 30 minutes, it's not guaranteed that you'll do really well with that. Like you have to think of what you're going to write and then write it down. But I think just sitting in front of my book 3 or 4 times a week, even if I don't write that many words, is really important just to stay in touch with it. So I'm pretty religious about that routine. So I still do that. It's just a little bit shorter in the morning, but also I don't have a commute and I don't have to shower. So there's pluses and minuses.
There you go.
Well, that is, again, it's a funny thing that I just had the thought the other day that I really need to lessen the number of things I expect myself to do every day, because I've always been it's always been like, oh, you know, if you do it every day, then it becomes a habit and then it's great. And then it's this and then it's that. And I somehow I've got this like list of like 10 things that I, it's too many for my bullet journals category, you know, little place where you can list things. I'm like, okay, that suggests I probably, you know, I can't, some of them are going to have to be every other day or every weekend or every Wednesday or something, because this is just, it's getting out of hand.
Yeah. So. I am very good. Like, my main talent is thinking of new projects, and then I can like type quickly and think of new projects, but like systems to get those projects done are a disaster. So I'm only basically allowed to have like one project at a time. And when Megan and I started our podcast, we were like, this podcast is cool, but it's not allowed to take away from our writing. So you need to think like, what is your real priority? What is the thing you're really trying to do? For me, especially if you have other responsibilities, and then you put the effort into that. And anything else you do is a bonus, but like, you have to think, okay, what is this one project that I'm working on right now?
Yeah. I like that. So even, I mean, and even now in sort of the midst of this craziness, having one North Star, if you will, and then the other things that can rotate around it is, I don't know, it's feeling like at least a pretty decent approach.
Yeah, I mean, like, my book is the only thing that is basically going well right now. Like, everything else is kind of on fire, but like, my book is like fine.
At least there's something. Something's going well.
Yes, that's awesome. That's really good.
Yep.
I'm happy.
My book's kind of on fire right now, so I'm not bragging. I can't even go there. No, it's okay. I recognize that.
Yeah. I just turned mine in, which means I'm now in my first flush of excitement on researching something new, which for me always picks me up, because I do love the process of gathering up the research and diving in and organizing, you know, just getting started and keeping my brain open that, you know, I'm going into the research with sort of a few ideas, but mostly with a totally blank slate, thinking this could become a whole bunch of different things, which is always exciting for me, which helps because I need something positive right now.
I love that positive stage too.
So yeah, it's really fun. So KJ and Serena will be getting lots of texts about some minutia that they have no interest in whatsoever. You know, akin to like the number of barrels of beer that were in the ship
that they drank on the Mayflower.
Exactly. Yeah.
notable moments.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you have to have someone to share that stuff with.
Yeah.
Because what keeps you going. Well,
yeah. That's the main bonus of
it. It's a little bit, the analogy for me is it's a little bit like having the pediatrician for the checkups after you have your infant, because really no one else cares about the stupid small things that are like at the center of your universe. You just need one person or two people I'm so fortunate to have like a couple of people who are willing to listen to the number of barrels of beer in the hold of the ship. Because that's what keeps me going. Because otherwise, you know, you got to do it for someone else. Otherwise, it's just, you know, you doing a deep dive in this weird closed off universe, and that's not fun.
Yeah. Well, and like to your question, KJ, about how do you get these things started if you want them? I mean, you don't sit around and wait for someone to start a writing group and ask you. And you can do, I think a lot of people get bogged down in the planning part. You know, it's going to be like this, you know, especially for like a podcast. Oh, I need to learn.
Once a week, we're going to do this. And every day we're going
to. I need to learn all this.
Yeah, you got to let it be.
You need to learn all this technology and I need to buy equipment. And you don't, first of all. And really, you just need to start. And that's okay. Like you figure it out as you go, because it's like doing all the research for your book and never actually writing the draft. You just have to eventually.
We don't know anyone who would ever run the risk of doing something like that.
And it might, you know, and it's also like to extend this, you know, writing groups as writing metaphor. You may ask people and they will say no, or they will say yes and not have the time. And that's okay too. It's like you pitch widely and eventually you hope someone will bite. And, you know, we started a writing group through our podcast and asked for, you know, people who were interested, and we have like a nice little core group of, 'cause we wanted a writing group and we had specific things we wanted out of it. And, We wanted people who were different from, you know, who wrote differently than we do, because they can, they're better. They can like find things in your writing that you, you won't see because that's not your style. So, but you just, you know, take a little bit of time to come up with what you think you want out of it and then ask, and then you just reassess as you go, but you just start.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know a lot of writers who have found their way to some kind of, I remember Jess making a lot of friends in the comments to Betsy Lerner's blog. And I know there are writers out
friends
there making
I still
friends.
Have.
Yeah. Making friends. I know. Making friends in the Facebook group too. For our podcast, there are writers out there making friends in the comments to the Writers Well podcast, which is another one that is a favorite of mine. All kinds of, yeah, there's lots of ways to do it. It's just making the decision to put yourself out there. And maybe now is a really good time to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, what else? Well, the other thing now is a really good time to
think. We need to move on.
Now's a really good time to move on.
So
that's where
today.
I was going. Let's talk on Let's over talk each other.
Oh, good.
To what we've been reading. Who wants to start? Megan, have you read anything good lately?
I have. I've been reading some really, really good things. So I was lucky enough to get to pick up my library holds right before the library closed for good. So I just read Megan Angelou's book, Followers, and it is fantastic. It
sounded really good.
Oh, it meets the hype. Like it sometimes books get, you know, circular blurbed around, and we've talked about that. But this one completely, like, it lives up to everything, but it's about the internet and the future, and set in 2015 and 2051, and about, you know, reality celebrities, and it's fantastic. It's thoughtful, but also really fun. And then I also just read Emily St. John Mandel's newest book, The Glass Hotel, and it is also excellent. And as she says, it's completely pandemic free. But it might be better than Station 11. I am not sure. I just loved it. And poor Olivia, it's not out in the UK yet. And I keep sending her pieces of it and saying, you have to read this, but I forget you can't go buy it yet. And
for like 5 months, but I think I can get it on Kindle. So I might do that.
Yeah. But it's so good. So that's the other one.
Awesome.
Olivia, what have you been reading?
Well, one of my current projects that I invented since quarantine started is I'm going to read Emma. I'm reading Emma. It's taking me forever because it's been hard to focus lately. But then I'm going to watch all the Emma movies and Clueless. And so
including the new one? Because
yeah,
the new one
it's
is so good.
Yeah, that's
it's so good.
Watching, but now
I loved
a whole
it.
Project out of it. Yeah, yeah. So I'm loving
I even live tweeted with no spoilers when we rented it for, because you know you can get it now for a ton of money. It's
no
like 20
spoilers.
Bucks to rent
it. It's worth it. It's so worth it.
I tweeted with no spoilers. I was but I was so bowled over by this version, and I've seen every single one, and I loved it. And we talk all the time about how for me Jane Austen is very much a comfort reread for me. So I go back often and reread Jane Austen. So I'm totally with you on that one.
It's wonderful, and it's great to be not in this time period. So I really love that. And then like for research, but it's not boring research. I've been reading, you know, spy novels and things like that as well. So there's a new book that's about Ukraine called, I think it's called Independence Day by A.D. Miller. And it's like one of the things I'm nervous about with my book is I'm writing about former Soviet Union, and I'm not like obviously from there. So I am reading lots of books by people who are not from that part of the world, and like seeing how they get reviewed and what people say, and also how they do that. So sort of research, but they're interesting books. So that's quite fun as well.
KJ, what about you?
Oh, me.
Oh, me, I get to go. You go.
I have been reading a lot. I read something I wasn't super overwhelmed by, although I finished it, so I guess I'll leave that one to the side. I've been going in heavy for the fun, the fun books. So I just read something called Love Lettering, and I will have to look up the author and put it in the show notes because I don't remember. It is purely rom-com, but it's a rom-com. It's super fun. It's about a woman who designs planners in Park Slope, Brooklyn. So amazing. Sort of right, the road to all of our hearts, right? That's sort of the way into a romance is like to be intrigued by whatever the side profession or the side plot, the trope, obviously.
Kate with that. Claiborne.
Thank you. And one of the reasons I had such a good time with it is that it's sort of clear as you're reading that something is coming, but I never guessed. There's a twist. It's not like a scare, you know, it's not like a, and then Batman swept in and, you know, killed everyone or something. It's not a depressing twist. It's just, there's something going on that I did not see it coming, and I liked that it came, and it was fun, and it made everything, it just made it that much more interesting. And it's fun to read something where you're like, oh, I never saw that coming. And it's kind of rare, really. So, Love Lettering, Kate Claiborne, liked it.
Okay. I'm going to get that as my next audiobook then. I am listening to Samantha Irby's new collection of essays called Wow, No Thank You. Her first one was Meaty, and I'm sorry, Samantha Irby, I can't remember the other one. It's but anyway, I really am enjoying it. She is a very particular voice. It's sort of like, I remember when I gave... I was reading some Anne Lamott, I think, a long, 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 long time ago. My dad looked over my shoulder and really, he just could not stand her voice. And from my understanding, you know, for me anyway, I happen to really, really like Samantha Irby's voice. And I was talking to someone the other day who really, really doesn't like Samantha Irby's voice. But if you are into it, you are way into it. And it's also just funny. I mean, she's exactly what I needed right now. In fact, I think the New York Times review of Wow, No Thank You was, you know, Samantha Irby couldn't have come a moment too soon. This is exactly what we needed right now. So I'm really enjoying that. And she reads the audiobook. So that's been really fun.
I'm going to check that out. I love her. Yeah.
She's really funny. She's also, I have to say, a great Twitter follow, too. Yeah. I really enjoy her Twitter feed.
I love her Instagram, since I'm not on Twitter.
Yep. Same. Yep. She's very fun. Actually, for am writing purposes, there's a chapter in Wow, No Thank You where she talks about how she completely flubbed an approach by a celebrity of turning Meaty into a some sort of series. She had no idea. She didn't understand the language of like sort of the approach and what this person was trying to convey to her. And it was really interesting because it was her first book and she was an outsider, you know, from her perspective anyway, in publishing and in sort of entertainment. And so she just didn't get what was happening. And it's a really entertaining essay about what happens when a celebrity comes to you and is like, hey, I'd love to sit down with you and talk about turning your book into a series and not understanding that that's what was happening. It's very entertaining.
All right. I'm definitely there. Well, before we wrap up, let me just remind everyone, we mentioned this, it's always in the show notes and it's always at the end of the podcast, but Marginally is a great podcast. It's super fun. And if you like am writing, you're probably going to like what they're doing. And
absolutely.
And it's just like books. Nobody listens to just one podcast.
And likewise, we love your podcast. We're huge fans.
Thank you. Yay. Yeah, you can
all
find
this Mutual
all of
Admiration
us.
Society. It's so much
Mutual
fun.
Mutual Admiration Society. You can find all of us in the show notes and in all the places. And yeah, I have found myself really unable to even do the please support the podcast and all that stuff right now. I don't know why, but you know where to
find
us.
It's a hard time
everybody.
To ask people to support anything, but yes, we do appreciate the support if you choose to, you know, go that direction. It's a tough time for everyone. So thank you to everyone who does support the podcast. It means the world to us, and we really, we adore you. Thank you. Until next week, though, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting Podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause, stop,
stall.
Thank you.